We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Mike's on He's ready to go
on the Fan,
New York Sports Radio.
Mike's on.
All right, 3 o'clock treat now. We throw around the word legends and a lot of words too often. A true legend of the sport now joins us, and that's Joe Namath. Joe, welcome. How are you?
Mike, I'm fine. Thank you, and it's a treat to talk with you,
my
buddy.
Pleasure. And first, let me tell you, Joe's also been busy with the Namath Neurological Research Center in Jupiter, Florida, and his recent launch of this new foundation benefiting children's charities because life is a team game. Joe, we'll talk about all that because I'm interested in all that. I know you're doing a lot of stuff with head injuries and concussions and all that stuff. But first, tell me what your thought is on the Jets season. I know you stay very up and current with what's going on. Tell me what you thought about the Jet year.
Well, I've been up and down like most Jet fans. We were expecting a bit of improvement, and they showed some improvement. Played a couple of few fine games. A few might be a stretch, but we see some areas that they need improvement, and it's been a continuation of frustrating many years since we last made the playoffs.
Joe, I always wondered, hearing you do interviews, hearing you through the years, you always stayed very current with the game and you had very strong and very, decisive opinions on the game. Did you ever come close to getting back into being in the front office or getting involved with a team, maybe the Jets, maybe somebody else? Did you ever come close to doing that?
Only talking with the Jets through the years and continuing to some extent. No, Mike, I know it's got to be passionate, and I'm only passionate about two teams, and that's the Jets and the Crimson Tide. And it is a dedicated lifestyle. You have to put in the time and effort. And so those are basically the only two places. And, of course, on the collegiate level, that's out of my league at this point. I still feel like I know pro football, I know the animals, I have an eye for what's going on, and I feel more comfortable with it.
I once interviewed Paul Bear Bryant as a young reporter, and I asked him, best player he ever coached, he said, two. He said, Joe Namath and Ozzie Newsome were the best athletes I ever coached. Just tell them something that they've heard the name. They don't know much about him. Tell them something about Paul Bear Bryant.
Well, I'll tell you something about Paul Bryant or Coach Bryant from those two comments. He has a way of saying some things. Athletes, one thing. Best football players, another thing. And Leroy Jordan and some other guys might have been better football players. But Coach Bryant always had a reason for what he said. At least I believe that. He was a very intelligent man, even though he did come from an area that was, he was educated. Coach Bryant became an educated man through the University of Alabama and his military career, too. He was sharp. He was a born leader. And that's one man I believe that we played for because we grew to love him. When we first met Coach Bryant, he was hard. He was tough to understand, except he did tell us, my freshman class, he told us, look, I'm going to teach y'all how to keep from beating yourselves. We're going to win here, and you're going to learn how to keep from beating yourselves. Well, Mike, that sounded a little negative to me to start with. Coming from Pennsylvania, we won a championship. It sounded like playing scared, worrying about beating yourselves. But to this day, you look at every football team, professional, collegiate, most of the time the loser does a good job of beating themselves by making mistakes, mental errors, dropping the ball, missing tackles. And he was a stickler for the basics, practicing properly, preparation. You know, Coach Bryant was wonderful.
And you, obviously, with your career there, going from Pennsylvania, you know, if I remember right, reading the books and going and hearing a story, Howard Schnellenberger went up there to recruit you, right?
Unannounced, Mike. There was a knock on the door one day. I happened to be home. My mother and I, just the two of us in the house. Knock on the door, and I went to the door. Didn't know who, you know, it was unsuspecting. And I opened it, and there was this big man there, and with a very deep voice. Nearly as deep as Coach Bryant's, or, you know, he favored Coach Bryant in that category, too, and coaching as well. But he introduced himself, and my mother came up behind me, and he introduced himself to my mother from the University of Alabama. And what had happened, Mike, is I didn't pass my college boards at the University of Maryland, and the coach there, Tom Nugent, knew Coach Bryant, so he called Coach Bryant. And Coach Bryant immediately sent Howard North. Alabama had come to recruit me during the basketball season that year, and I wasn't even thinking about where I was going to go to school at that time. But my mother liked the way Howard Schnellenberger presented himself, and she wanted me to go to college. And by gosh, she went upstairs, packed a bag that you could put under the seat in front of you on an airplane, and said, "Here you are, Coach. Go ahead and take them." Gave me a $5 bill, Mike. Said, "Take them." And I was off to a place I'd never heard of in my life.
How big was the culture shock, Joe? How crazy was it going into Alabama, going into Tuscaloosa from Pennsylvania? It must have been amazing how different life was, right?
It was different, but again, I had a basic education from home. You know, you don't speak unless you're spoken to, that kind of thing. Be respectful of what's around you, the people that are around you. So I was, for the most part, a quiet kind of freshman, and I was learning. I was shocked, yes. I was shocked because we did not have the way of life in western Pennsylvania that I saw happening in Alabama. And it just happened to be 1961, and there was the start once again of trying to eliminate the oppression. And I was fortunate to be down there and see history change somewhat.
No question. I mean, changed dramatically. Great years at Alabama, and Joe led his tide to a national championship in 64, where, I mean, a different world in those days. But Alabama football, I mean, that's religion. And people, I mean, they lived and died with those games. I mean, absolutely. I mean, even anything in the pros doesn't compare to that, but you did lead them to a national championship. But is there a game, is there a moment that sticks out for you in your college? You know, everyone always talks to you about the Super Bowl, but is there a game in college that sticks out to you? Is it a Texas game? Is there a game that just jumps out at you that you remember fondly in college?
Yes, and again, Coach Bryant told us about this this would happen when we look back on our careers and all. He said we would remember the bad times more readily than we'd remember the good ones, the losses more readily than we'd remember the championship or the conference titles. And he was right on. I think about a loss to Georgia Tech in 62, and we were number one in the country. And, Mike, we followed that game up with a 38-0 shutout of Auburn and a 17-0 shutout of Oklahoma. But I think about that Georgia Tech game. And, of course, one loss to Auburn and the loss to Texas that you mentioned. The fourth loss, I'm not sure that I was a part of. Florida. It's Florida. And a young Steve Spurrier.
Was Steve on that team? Was he on that team? Yeah.
I was a junior, and Steve was a sophomore. And we lost to Florida at home in Tuscaloosa. Very tight game, you know, one touchdown apiece and a field goal kind of thing.
We're talking with Joe Namath. I want to get to his great work he's doing down there with the Neurological Research Center down in Jupiter that I'm familiar with. But, you know, Joe, I don't want to embarrass you about this, but I don't know if fans realize, I mean, I always say this, there's two people that changed the way athletes are looked at in this country, the way they're covered and everything else. One was Muhammad Ali, and the other was you, because when you burst on the scene, you were like a rock star. I mean, you weren't just an athlete. I mean, I remember when you had Namath girls and Mantle men. Mickey was like a baseball player, and I idolized Mickey. But you were like a rock star. You were like one of the Beatles. I mean, it was crazy when you watching that stuff when you were young.
Well, you know, thanks for bringing up Mickey, too, Mike. What a guy. I loved him. He was and Mickey, you know, before he passed, when he came out and said, if I'd known I was going to live this long, I'd have taken better care of myself. And we knew what he meant. I believe that, too. But anyway, a whole lot of that. Well, the times were changing. You know, the early 60s, the mid-60s times were changing. And Mr. Werblin, along with the other owners of the Jets, allowed me to be myself. And being a Gemini, there's more than one side. I would really say that the ownership of the Jets and Mr. Werblin at that time, being media savvy, being conscious of the media and wanting to work with them, afforded them the chance to get to know us better than the prior regime or the Titans ever did or maybe some other professional teams. Our ownership catered to the media because we respected them. They did. And Mr. Werblin, he and Mrs. Werblin, Mr. Hess and Mrs. Hess, they looked after me. They took me around town, introduced me to different folks. And Mike, a key to all this was Coach Eubank, major key. Coach Eubank didn't believe in having his team come to practice until noon each day.
That, it worked right into your schedule, right? He also told them they had to pretend. You know, it's funny. Buddy Ryan told me years later in an interview I did, he said, I learned to attack the quarterback because Weeb Eubank used to say, we better protect this quarterback at any cost. And I learned if it's that important to protect them, I'm going to figure out a way to attack them. And he said that led me to come up with all these different ways to go after the quarterback because what our rule was nobody touches Namath.
You know, and Coach Eubank learned from Paul Brown before him. Coach Eubank used an interesting blocking technique, Mike, with our offensive line. He didn't have our tackles dropping right at the snap, fast, dropping back. He had them take those linemen on and the people on at the line of scrimmage because I had a technique of getting depth quickly. And whenever we got that depth and I was able to survey the field, if they weren't there, we'd throw the ball away. We'd throw the ball away. Our protection was good, very good for times, you know, keeping people away for the amount of time that you could read everybody, and then you threw it away. You didn't take the loss. You weren't coming back second down and 18. You were coming back second and 10 maybe, but we've had a good theory there. He did coach Johnny Unitas, as you know,
yep.
And Johnny was one great quarterback and great guy, and that's one of the main reasons I did go to the Jets also, Coach Eubank.
Wasn't it one of your tackles? Wasn't it Sherman Plunkett who came up with Broadway Joe? Wasn't he the guy who coined Broadway Joe?
Thanks again for bringing that up, man. I can see his face right now. We sat directly across from each other in the locker room. We came in after practice one day. I was a rookie. This was September. And on everyone's stool was a Sports Illustrated magazine with my picture on the cover. Well, I'm a rookie, you know, and I'm still keeping my mouth shut pretty good because the veterans like Jerry Philbin, especially our man Jerry Philbin, he didn't let me say too much. You know, he just kept quiet. Dave Herman, an offensive guy, you know, they were kind of grumpy. And I did give Philbin the name Mr. Personality. Anyway, Sherman looked at that. And I carried Sherman's helmet back in from practice, too, by the way. Sherman had his big helmet, because Sherman was a big man. But we sat down. I'm sitting looking across the room at him as he's looking at that magazine. And he looked up at me across the room, and a big old smile broke out on his face. And his words were, "Oh, Broadway, Broadway Joe." And, man, that's the best I ever heard it, saw, whatever. And it came from... from our senior leader on the team.
Stuck to today, of course, the legendary Joe Namath, Broadway Joe. I'd be remiss if we don't mention Super Bowl III, which obviously is a game that, along with the Colt game played against the Giants, the two most important games of all time. Tell me this. We know how cocky the Colts were. We know all the talk, the guarantee, the whole thing. The game itself, Joe, how much of the game, especially the second half, did you call at the line of scrimmage? Did you call the whole game in the second half at the line of scrimmage?
No. It started from the get-go. From the first quarter throughout the game, 90% of the time from the line. But in the fourth quarter, when we had a 16-0 lead, we got in the huddle and talked about things. And we were going to run the ball. In fact, we didn't throw a forward pass in the fourth quarter. We were going to run the clock because our defense had those guys shut out, man. And, you know, we weren't going to put the ball up. We weren't going to take any risky stuff. Our offensive line was blocking. We played a heck of a game that day. And as you mentioned, I can't help but believe and know the Colts were overconfident coming into that game.
You think they were overconfident, but were you as confident when you made the guarantee? Were you as confident as you acted, or were you out there basically putting it out there a little bit?
Before I made that guarantee, I was confident. We had looked at films of the Colts prior to going down to Florida for the game. I knew, the Colts weren't going to change for us. They were going to keep doing what they did best, and that was putting pressure on the passer. That was blitzing. That was choking that line of scrimmage. They lost one game that year to the Cleveland Browns early in the season, and they beat Cleveland 34-0 in the NFC Championship game, or the National Football League Championship game. The Colts weren't going to change for us, and we had intelligent linemen, backs, and receivers. They could listen and go with the audibles all the time, or the check with me. I'd get in the huddle and give a formation and say, check with me on such and such a count, and just go up and look at them. And they gave an indication to me where the strength of the defense was prior to the snap, and also where the strength of the coverage was going to be after the snap. So we took advantage of that, and we executed it. Poise and execution are two words that are on the sides of our world championship ring. And that was Weeb Eubank. That's what he stressed. Keep your poise and execute. And that's what we did that day.
Absolutely. The whole team. That was a great win and an important win. The Jets, of course, 16-7. That was the first quarterback ever to win a college championship and a pro championship. Joe was the first in that legendary game. To say this, now, having been old enough to watch you play as I did, and I would liken you a little bit for those who didn't see you, and they've seen film, but a lot to Dan Marino, carry that ball high, the great throw, to release the whole thing. How many games can you tell me that you played, not pain-free, because I don't know if you've ever played any, but played where your legs were not really a problem?
Well, I hit my right knee my senior year in college in the fourth game, and it wasn't the same after that. It was never good after that. Reconstructive surgery back then it was pretty darn good, but was never the same after that. It was like, if I'd have played any other position, Mike, I don't believe I could have played. I couldn't have run. I couldn't make cuts. It was putting too much pressure on the lateral side stepping, trying to push off. I couldn't do that. So I was never the same runner, or I had a lot of quickness and pretty good speed prior to that.
Yeah, you were a good runner. I remember that. You were a good runner in college, but you still could set up quick. You still got back there and set up very quick.
Yes, and that's because I was quick. I told you, I'm quick, and I had some good speed, but I didn't have to use the right leg in the fashion that put the pressure on the inside of the knee. I was pushing off with my left leg and reaching and sprinting and then coming to a halt again on my left side. My technique didn't put the pressure on the inside of the knee. And so I almost bragged, but I didn't. I had enough sense not to with three older brothers. But I played five straight years without missing a game.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And really, they didn't expect you to play. Didn't Dr. Nicholas early on say he didn't think you'd last a couple of years?
I don't know if he'd ever say that, but he knew the knee was not as strong as would have liked to have been. And I had a couple of other operations along the way there, but he got me ready, and it's the way it was. It worked out, Mike.
It worked out great. We're talking with the legendary Joe Namath, one of the great careers of all time, and obviously has been Broadway Joe for these many generations, and now he's involved down in Florida, where he's lived for a long time, with the Namath Neurological Research Center in Jupiter. Tell me a little bit about the work you're doing down there, Joe.
Well, Mike, I became aware, a lot of us, 5-6 years ago, actually a little longer than that, about 9 years ago, because of a teammate of mine that shared some information with myself and a couple of other teammates about traumatic brain injuries. And I knew that I had had some concussions in the past as well. Well, the teammate that shared that with myself and my other two teammates, he told us about it going on 3 years in the 4 years, and how he was terrified and what was happening to him. So I thought, well, look, knowing that I had concussions, I felt like it behooved me to find out what my situation was for myself and my family. And I contacted Jupiter Medical Center and their head of the neurology department, and asked them to have me evaluated. And so they gave me cognitive tests, took a brain scan, and sure enough, the left side of my brain was not getting blood to the temporal area and continued on the side to the back. So we started a series of hyperbaric oxygen dives. After the first 40, those cells were getting blood. After the second 40, and we took another scan. After the second 40, the cells looked as healthy as the right side.
Wow.
After the last dive, I did 120 dives. The cells, the brain was beautiful. The cognitive test each time improved. So we sent that study to the FDA. And the FDA said, this is great. This is terrific. But you know what we need? We need another 100 studies of the same fashion, the same way. So what we're doing now at the Joe Namath Neurological Center is conducting studies, putting people through the hyperbaric oxygen treatment, seeing wonderful things happen to these people, and they're putting them back in the workforce, being able to talk again, lift their left arm again, just getting back out into general society's activities. We're on the way, Mike.
How good is that? That's great work, Joe. That really is amazing. I mean, especially with all the CTE stuff and the concussions and the stuff we're learning about how much football players, you know, give to the game and how much, you know, they have problems later in life.
You're right, Mike, but it's not just football players, you see. There are folks falling down and hitting their heads. There are people in automobile accidents that got concussions or get head injuries. There are children falling down getting traumatic brain injuries. And there's no help for them. There's no help. There's no insurance company that recognizes traumatic brain injuries that'll help those that have it happen to cover the costs of these treatments. So we've got to prove to the FDA with 100 studies
right.
that this is it, and we're going to get help to a whole lot of people.
That's tremendous. And for more information, visit NamethNeuroCenter.org. That's NamethNeuroCenter.org. And they can, if someone wants to make a donation, they can make it to there too, Joe, if they'd like to help you with the research and stuff like that?
Well, that's what we're doing, yes. We're trying to raise funds. And I tell you what, Mike, the biggest fundraisers and the most general people I've come across, I got to tell you, it was right there in New York. And
I agree with that. I agree with that completely, yes.
We've had some fundraisers up there for the Neurological Research Center, and they are wonderful. They've helped, and I'm going to be around helping up there, too, in the future.
Well, let us know when you do, and we'll help promote it for you, and we'll try to help you out, because you're right. Everyone up here is amazingly generous. Anytime we ask them for a charity, anything we ask them for, they do a great job. So I'm sure they could do some help, and it sounds like you're doing some great job, great work with that stuff. It really is. That's really some amazing technology and amazing breakthroughs that you're making.
It is, it's not new. Hyperbaric oxygen therapy has been around for a couple of hundred years anyway, but we are making progress. There are several doctors around the country and institutions that are utilizing it, and someday people with traumatic brain injuries are going to be able to have the benefit of getting help.
Well, that's good to know. I appreciate it. Listen, I can sit here and talk to you all day, but I know I've kept you a long time. But thank you very much for coming on today. It was great to have you on. Always a pleasure to talk to you. And, maybe we'll talk again soon. And, again, if you send us some of that, we'll help any way we can, okay?
Yeah, and, Mike, you hear time flies, and it really does when we're looking back. But I want to say thank you for the 30 years. That have flown by.
Yeah, they have. They absolutely have, yes.
And communicating with we fans, man. You know, only time things don't fly by is when they're bad, when somebody's sick. And, man, you've helped us for 30 years, so thank you, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your run.
Thank you, Joe, very much. Pleasure to have you on. Thank you.
Thank you.
The great Joe Namath, and it's again the NamethNeuroCenter.org. Okay, that's the Namath Neurological Research Center, Jupiter, Florida. And again, the foundation that he also started for the kids this year, NamethNeuroCenter.org. Back after this.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.